I am a big believer in creative partnerships, ones where people with shared visions and intentions work together to create greater impacts than they would have had by working alone. That's part of what this upcoming show is all about. We're going to be spending time with two passionate, committed visionaries who know what it takes to grow and nurture sustainable communities and also know the true meaning of the word partnership. Get ready to learn about social impact lending and how it's making a difference, and also about how a model for funding community sustainability works. Get ready to have fun with us, learn with us, and become as excited as I am when you learn about how this partnership is creating national attention. Hey, everybody, I'm Gina Murphy-Darling, and we're going to get down to earth talking about Community Investment Corporation and Local First, a winning combination. And I am so very excited about this show for lots of reasons. Because of my in-studio guests, that's what starts this party. They are friends, they are colleagues, and they are making a difference in our community and for the planet. Danny Nee, the executive director of the Community Investment Corporation, and his team have a vision to create a better life for residents of Southern Arizona by investing in the lifeblood of our region's economy, small businesses, and the nonprofit organization that serve our communities. I'm going to call it CIC from now on because it's being a good word stored, is making an immense positive impact on our community. He'll share with us the how of what they're doing and just what social impact lending is all about. Mike Peel, Southern Arizona Director for Local First and Local First Arizona Foundation, is truly and sincerely a master of creating successful partnerships. He is here to share with us how their current model for funding community sustainability works, what makes it successful, and some of the best practices they have incorporated into their model. So welcome, you two. It feels like it's long overdue since we first talked about doing this podcast.
Agreed. Great to be here.
I know.
Thanks so
great
much for having us. And I'm humbled to be with you and Mike because you guys do so much good work in the community. So thanks.
Danny, that's really nice.
Likewise.
Really nice. Likewise is right back at you. But it's so funny, as you know, some might call this work. But as I was prepping for the show, I was smiling and I was excited and I was clicking on links. And I thought, you cannot call this work when it's your passion. So two things before we get going and on with the show, as they say. First, a warm, sincere thanks to you, Danny, and to the Community Investment Corporation for being the sponsor of this show. We're thrilled that we're going to be helping to share information about what I think is one of Tucson's best kept secrets. So thank you, Danny, for all the great work that you and your team do out there. Yeah, it's really quietly, silently making a difference.
Well, we're happy to help you get the word out. So thank you.
I'm so excited. And a brief shout out from another MGW partner, Tucson Electric Power. We're giving energy tips in a lot of the podcasts. This is another great one. And I was cracking up when I read it. It's consider insulating the first 6 feet of hot and cold water pipes connected to the water heater. So once again, I ask you, why would you not do this when you know it would save money and energy? It just makes sense. And then I felt compelled to add, full disclosure, I personally will not be doing this in my home, but I'm going to pass it on to someone in the family who will help me out here. So I will not be going wrapping the pipes after this podcast, but I thought it was a good idea. So Mike and Danny, let's do this. Let's have some fun. Let's educate and inspire people about what you're doing. And Danny, I think we should start with you. The great reveal is what I'm calling it. What is Community Investment Corporation, its mission? Share away. Tell us about it.
Well, Community Investment Corporation, we are a 501c3 nonprofit. We were created in 1996 as a support organization for the Pima County Industrial Development Authority. So we are basically a working arm of theirs. We're a separate 501c3. Our mission is a general economic development mission, but really what we focus on is trying to help small businesses, nonprofits, and individuals in our community thrive and succeed. And we do that through a number of programs. The one that I think we're going to talk talk most about today is our small business lending program, where we try to increase access to capital for people who generally don't have it. They can't get loans from banks. They can't get the loans that they need. And we understand why banks have a certain business model, but we're here to help in our community. We believe in the power of small businesses, of entrepreneurship, the innovation that comes with that, and the good that can be done in the community through investing in it.
And there's one of the main reasons why I'm excited about this show, because it's the backbone of our country. Small businesses, nonprofits, we're making all the wheels on the bus go round and round. And I know we'll get into it a little bit, but sometimes just a little bit of money can help a small business to stay in business. It's not like they need $200,000 if they can just get help with payroll or cover this expense or buy this, you know, HVAC system that went out. So you're there to help that.
Absolutely. I mean, 51% of our GDP in the United States actually comes from small businesses. So I joke sometimes that we hear about, you know, all the celebrity CEOs, the Mark Zuckerbergs of the world, and they dominate the headlines. And yet more of our gross domestic product is from small business than it is from those big corporations. And they do it to very or relatively little fanfare.
I got goosebumps because we gloss over those statistics, 51%. So we are in the majority, myself being a small business owner.
That's right.
Like, we are in the majority, and having two nonprofits sitting before me. So in terms of conservation, how does the mission of a nonprofit lender fit into this conversation? And it certainly does. And I don't have the answer to that. So I'm curious to hear what your answer is.
Well, we see conservation as something that isn't simply good for the community and the environment. And it certainly is. And we should pay attention to that part. But further, conservation is a good business strategy. Mike with Local First, who approached us about a partnership scale-up that we'll talk more about, you know, they're more the experts and brought experts to the table in conservation. And what we saw is how it impacts the bottom line. With small businesses, even small savings can be reinvested into the businesses. It's a way to increase profits and to help grow over time. And we want to deal with businesses who see themselves in it for the long haul. Sometimes people don't do conservation because of that short-term outlay of capital, and they worry about that cost right then. And that's where we're coming in, obviously in partnership with Local First, to provide loans for conservation. And we do it at a lower interest rate, a preferred interest rate. And on top of that, we've actually committed some grant funds so that we're even offsetting the interest. As I like to joke, we basically have a negative interest loan if you consider the grant. You're not going to get that from a bank too often. But the idea is that we want to invest in businesses to invest in themselves. And that's how we see conservation. We see the idea of there's a benefit beyond just the benefits of a successful business. And we are very much invested in seeing businesses do well for, you know, the tax revenue that they bring in, the number of people they employ, those types of things. But there are also these other enhanced benefits. Conservation is one. That's a community benefit that goes beyond the bottom line, but it is also complementary to the bottom line as we see it.
It helps everybody. I mean, that's the thing. It's like the green trifecta, if you ask me. So let's foray a little bit into the concept of social impact lending. It's one of the things I get the most excited about. It's just a catchphrase that people, you know, it rolls off their tongue, but a lot of people might not know what it is. So what is it and how does it work? And what does social impact lending entail?
Well, social impact lending, there's this concept now of social entrepreneurship. which are basically businesses that do they do good while they make money, so good for the community. Social impact lending is basically we are trying to capture those social entrepreneurs, people that are investing in things that, again, benefit our community beyond just their bottom line and their success as a business. So things like we talked about, conservation, clean energy, energy efficiency. We also look at things like community health. So, you know, is there something where we can make a loan to a community clinic and we would see that's a benefit to the community? And in that case, we're going to try to incentivize those types of businesses with lower interest rates and more favorable terms than in our general loan portfolio. Things like local food and agriculture. We work with the community food bank right now on a food entrepreneurship program. We're trying to get healthy foods to people's tables, as well as restaurants. The whole idea of the farm to plate movement that's going on. We see that as a community benefit, again, beyond just a business doing well. We're also looking at things like incentivizing businesses to pay living wages. And so if you're able to do so and can, then again, we're going to look at lower interest rates and favorable terms to try to incentivize people to do these things that, again, help their business and also help the community.
Given the current state of our country, I have to just like press pause here and say part of the joy in preparing for the show and hanging out with people like you is that this is all about good news. And I use that expression, giving people a hand up, not a hand out. When you teach someone how to be a chef or a sous chef or a sous prep chef, you're giving them a skill. People are always going to eat. If you teach them how to grow their own food, I mean, it's the essence of sustainability and social justice. So it's like, yeah, I love doing the show. It makes me smile and it has nothing to do with any bad news. So in conversations I've had with you, I've heard you say that lending is an underutilized tool for nonprofits to expand their impact and service. Tell us what you mean by that.
Well, I think, so if we look at it from a fundraising standpoint and think about philanthropic dollars, and I can give you some quick examples and therefore illustration, but fundraising is very difficult. I used to be a development director for one of my favorite nonprofit organizations,
Let's
Habitat.
Let's give them a shout out. Yes, because it's one of my favorite. We can do a little like bell ringing here, Habitat
Same
Humanity.
Here.
Talk about hand up, not hand out.
Wonderful organization.
Yep.
And they have that model of basically using lending to enhance what their service is. And, you know, I spent 8 years there as the deputy director. And so that's that approach is really in my blood. And when we look at philanthropic dollars, they're very hard to raise. And
And it's a really crowded space.
Very crowded space.
I just have to say that in Tucson, everybody's going for the same dollars from the same donors, and it's exhausting.
Absolutely. So excluding giving to churches and places of worship, there's close to $350 billion that were donated to over 1.2 million charitable organizations in 2017 in the United States. So that's an average of roughly $285,000 per organization. And what I would say also, basically, since 1974, the amount of annual giving that's been available, it's increased by about 3%. That's basically controlled for inflation per year. And so what that means is that each year, if we just use, again, we're using just these big numbers, nonprofits can expect an additional $8,550 a year. Now, new programs are not created on $10,000 a year. That doesn't pay for nearly even a staff member.
Oh.
And so what we're saying is that lending is another tool where nonprofits may be able to increase their impact and actually also improve their economic sustainability over
time.
And that's really what we're trying to do, we would never say that that lending is the should be the only form of charity. We're not saying that somebody should have to, you know, run a tab for needing food at the community food bank. That's not at all. What we are saying is that there are possibly portions of the service that nonprofits offer that where lending may be appropriate, where the individuals and clients getting service may be able to pay a portion back over time. The idea, take an emergency fund that may help somebody repair their car
to
be able to get to work.
Right.
They may be able to pay that back over time. They just don't have the money right then. And what we really try to push is this idea of paying it back to pay it forward. So we'll offer a loan in some of these cases, and we talk to the client receiving it and say, hey, you know, this we hope this helps, but also so that you know, as you're paying back your loan, you're helping us to be able to pay it forward to the next person who has this need. And so we've been talking with a lot of the nonprofits in the community to see, is there a small portion of your service, you know, the suite of services that you offer, that lending may be appropriate? And you guys probably don't have the infrastructure. There's a cost to it.
Right,
and
right.
What we are offering is to basically help them to originate and service those loans in order so that they can actually raise more money for what they're doing. On top of that, the idea of fundraising the next $100,000, as you said, you basically have to, if you get it, you're basically wrestling it away from another nonprofit.
So true.
In town. And what lending has the ability to do is to basically bring more money into the nonprofit community to actually help with the service. Obviously, to do it responsibly. Again, we're looking at low interest rates, those types of things. We're very careful about how we do it. But we do think it's an underutilized resource. And we know that places like Habitat for Humanity, who they don't give away their homes, their homeowners will pay a mortgage. It's at 0% interest. But they're actually generating resources, financial resources for their operations and for their continued service by doing so. And we would like to replicate that model if we can around the community.
And it's so interesting to me sitting here having started any number of businesses and they're all still operating out there. But a bank in Tucson, and I'll say it was National Bank of Arizona, which was small then and a local, it was an Arizona owned bank. There were people that I knew that were investors in the bank. If it wasn't for a small business loan that they gave to us over 20 years ago, I wouldn't be sitting here. I would have a very different story because they saved us and they had to do it. It was a very funny story, but they had to do it kind of to like reach a quota for small business. And we were a women-owned business minority and all that. It really worked in our favor. But I became friends with Dave Faust and stayed friends with him. We went to Bank of Tucson. But as a small business owner, I shake my head vigorously because I know what you're talking about. Just a little bit can help over that hard spot or that rough spot and then help you become more profitable, which is just what you're saying. So it's pretty exciting if you ask me. And you did explain by paying it back to pay it forward, and that's a great concept. So I'd like to know about what are some of the biggest barriers that you see, the things in applications that keep businesses from getting approved, not just from the Community Investment Corporation, but from traditional lenders? What stops that?
One of the things that we see is that businesses are and business owners, especially small business owners, they're really focused on the day-to-day. They're focused on what's right in front of them.
I'm resembling that remark.
And so one of the things that does happen is that they may not have their financials in order, or they may not have them up to date because it's something that gets pushed back. You know, they're worried about paying bills and they're worried about serving their customers. And the issue is that in the lending world, even for an alternative nonprofit lender like ourselves, the ability to repay is really important.
Got to have your ducks in order.
And we can't, and we really can't get a handle on that without having those financials. And what's great about our community is there are lots of resources out there. The YWCA.
I was going to say that's another rock star in all of our lives. We all light up when anybody talks about the YWCA. Great partners.
Absolutely. The Women's Business Center, which is not only exclusively for women.
But amazing.
Absolutely amazing. And they do trainings. And they can help businesses get ready for a loan. There's also the Small Business Development Centers, SBDCs, who do the same thing. They work with small business owners to basically become what we call loan ready. So that's one of the bigger things for businesses that are just starting out. Maybe somebody has a business idea. One of the bigger problems is not having a detailed enough business plan, being overly optimistic about the marketplace, about the demand out there. It's one of those things is normally a lender is going to want to see very conservative estimates, and people, you know, obviously are very passionate and
if you're the owner, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that and we're going to have this much market share. It's very easy.
Absolutely. And so, and that's another thing for just, I think, people starting out. But what we want to encourage people to do is to look into some of the resources in town, because there are people out there that really are invested in helping people start their small businesses. There are incubators around town, Startup Tucson. There are a bunch of different resources out there to help people start businesses.
And it's really funny because you do have that pie in the sky, really get excited. And one of the funniest things that people say to me is, oh my gosh, you're so lucky owning your own business. Some days I am. Some days people don't understand all that goes with that. So having support systems like the ones you mentioned, I mean, even when I started, I think my first company, SCORE helped me. The executives. Mm-hmm. That's what the RE, retired executives. They would help with writing a business plan and reviewing your business plan and your pro formas and all that stuff. But there are a lot of resources out there. So I want to make sure that, you know, it's so funny. I wanted just to have a conversation, but we had to cover all your stuff.
Sure.
Because my last question is really an important one, and then we'll get on to Mike, and then we'll have some joint conversation. But Danny, what, in terms of social impact, can you share with us any other programs or initiatives that you're working on that are more focused on the individual consumer, lending them? Is there anything on that you care to share at this point?
Sure. So we traditionally have been a business lender. And when you lend to individuals, it's considered consumer lending. And there's a different licensing that's required. And there are... it's sort of a higher threshold of requirements in terms of what we have to do. We just last year we got our consumer lending license, and we are working to get into the consumer market. But what we're doing right now, which has been great, is a partnership. Again, this idea of partnership with Catholic Community Services and the Pio Decimo Center, and we are originating loans through Pyramid Federal Credit Union. Ray Lancaster, he's a great guy who's helped us out. What we're doing is we are offering an alternative to predatory lending. So predatory lending is just, in my opinion, a scourge on our community.
It is the devil. It is.
It is. It's a $36 billion market. Basically, if you consider payday lending across the country, it takes $1 billion out of our economy through lost consumer spending, job losses, and bankruptcy on an annual basis.
Theft. They should just call it theft.
It is. And so what we are doing is we are, our portion is that we are refinancing individuals out of predatory loans. We've started in a small way. We've been working with nonprofits to have them identify consumers who may need this help. It's basically just a pilot project. It's small right now. We're working with $100,000 to lend out. But we will say we have refinanced currently 5 loans. One was as high as 695% annual percentage rate.
Like, that is egregious, disgusting. I can't even say. When you told me that at a lunch one day, I came home and I said to my husband, 695%. Those people are criminals. It should be a crime.
It is one of these things where we believe in capitalism.
Yes.
As CIC, we're involved. We believe in the power of markets.
But, I'm a capitalist.
Back in the early 1900s, there used to be a cap at 10% was the highest interest rate that could be charged. Otherwise, it was considered usury. And now, we voted by voter initiative to cap it when we got rid of payday lending in 2010 to cap interest rates at 36%. Yet there was a carve out, a loophole that was created that allowed auto title lenders to loan at over 200%. And now people can get access to loans online. That's where the 695% came from. And we just believe there's a different way. The project we have is called ABLE, A Better Loan Experience. And we are lending up to $1,000 at 12% interest rate. People have to have a year's worth of employment history to be able to qualify. There's also an income. Currently, there is an income qualification, but we are looking to see in these initial stages how we do with our pilot and then are hoping to expand that in the future.
So, Danny, tell us in like a real number, if I go to a payday loan place and I borrow $1,000, what can that payment and they say? The thing that bothers me, there's so many things that bother me, but usually it's predatory because the people they're targeting are not the highest skilled, they're not the highest educated, they don't have bank relationships, so they really are predators in the truest sense of the word. So I go in, I need money, I have to buy diapers for my child, I need gas for my car, so I go in and I'm told this, and then they sign paperwork. And you only have to pay us back $1,000. What can that potentially turn into?
Well, I mean, we've seen $1,000 loans that have $550 monthly payments, and even after several months, there's barely any principal has been eaten into. One of the big problems with predatory lending and these types of loans is that only 4%. Are paid back during the initial term. And so what winds up happening is that they flip the loans, they charge more fees, and they basically issue another loan to pay back the loan that you weren't able to pay back in a week or 2 weeks. And this is the real issue, I think, with this, because it's predatory in that the lenders depend on the borrower's defaulting.
Failing.
Not being able to pay it back to make their money. Again, only 4% actually pay back in a single term. Otherwise, it's 96% of the people that go in are having to flip these loans over and over. And that's our problem. We think that there's a better loan product. I'm not sure what the actual interest rate should be. We would love the marketplace to get involved and actually have more people, banks and those things help refinance people out of these at lower interest rates. 12% may not be high enough, but what I've said to people is 200% is definitely not it. 695%
what a difference.
Is not it.
What a difference. And it's so doable. And I was talking with a client the other day. We're going to go way over. This is fine. And he said that he's working with a bank, a regional bank back east, that's developing a program for Comcast. And 21% of Comcast employees don't have relationships with banks. They cash their checks at a payday place. And that's just lack of education. So they're doing a comprehensive education program, and they're going to implement this. And it's always shocking to me, but it's that cultural and socioeconomic divide. I learned how to go open a bank account because my parents did. So it's changing that culture and giving people that hand up to help them manage better in the future. So, Mike, thanks for your patience. I mean, this is like, it seems like we've been on for 5 minutes.
It's fascinating, right? It's gone so fast.
It is fascinating. And I think our listeners are going to be banging on their heads when you hear that 659% interest rate. It makes me sick. It gives me pause.
Well, immediately when I met Danny, I knew there was an opportunity for partnership.
Soulmates.
It was so clear to me that the work they're doing is some of the most important work going on in this community by far.
I agree. I totally agree.
Oh, thank
you. Can
you
tell by my passion. It's like, oh my gosh, this is. I hope that next time you're on the show, you have $500,000 to lend people. I'm not kidding. Let's just keep rolling it out. Okay, so Michael Peel, we have a very diverse listener base, but I'm sure there are some people that are not familiar with Local First and the incredible work you're doing. So why don't we start out by you telling us what's Local First?
I love starting off with our mission. Our
yes.
mission is such an inspiring one. It's what drove me to want to be working with Local First Arizona is the focus on creating a more diverse and inclusive economy and to make it more resilient. What we focus on with our work is our systems. How do we create a better system and system change work, really, with our local credit unions and our banks, our local food system, our environmental sustainability efforts, our rural work that we do throughout the state, anything related to strengthening the local economy. And it's all about that shift of dollars. How do we all individually contribute to that shift and have that systems change where more money stays in our community as a result? It's all about ultimately local ownership. We want more small businesses thriving. We want more nonprofits thriving. And we want our system thriving for everybody. So it's about equity. And I love to also mention this fact every time I talk about Local First Arizona. We're the largest locally owned independent business coalition in the
country here
in Arizona.
It was my next question.
What an accomplishment.
What an accomplishment.
Thanks and to
numbers
the visionary
growing.
Leadership of Kimber Lanning.
She's a rock star.
And you're a rock star.
She's been on the show.
You've been telling people about our cause for the longest time, and I am so appreciative
of
how much you do to get people to want to be localists, as we like to say. Anyone can be a localist. And
right.
then we are a membership organization and we're a nonprofit organization. That's not necessarily as known, is that we are working in both arenas. And this kind of work that we're now partnering with the Community Investment Corporation on is, I think, an exciting new frontier for us to be delving
deeper. I just think it's a model for the community. I really do.
Yeah, well, it's about economic sustainability and it's about environmental sustainability, in my view and in our view. The more we can do to save our businesses and nonprofits that we serve, the money that they need to grow and expand and invest in their businesses, then I think that's one of the most impactful areas of work we could be looking at.
So it's a big passion of yours, this whole funding community sustainability and making it successful. So maybe start with, what is your definition of community sustainability? You know, when we all hang out, we have these things, we don't even think about them anymore. But what is your definition of community sustainability?
I have a holistic view or definition of it from my years of work doing environmental nonprofit development work as well and working in the field from the residential side to the business side to the nonprofit side. And I think it's about a holistic definition of energy savings, water savings, transportation reductions, waste reductions, anything related to green teams, which you are a pioneer in. And I've learned a lot from you about how to best do
that
work. And so it's all of it together. And I think if we don't look at it holistically, we're not going to move the needle enough. And I think we can't be siloed about this work. And the most exciting element of Local First Arizona to me is that we're very partnership-based. Everything we've been doing here in Southern Arizona, for example, to grow our efforts has been partnership-based. It's working with you. It's been working with, obviously, Danny and so many others. I could go on for a whole show just listing all of our partners in the
truly.
Community.
Truly, and it's
truly.
Real. For you,
and
it is.
The Tucson,
that's
2030
what you're
district.
About.
I know
the 2030
you've,
district.
Promoted
another
them
cheerleader
many
for
times
that.
In the community
yeah.
to grow their efforts. So it's all partnership-based, and we have to, I think, get out of that silo mentality that so often happens. And I think Local First Arizona has been pioneering for a long time how to be more partnership-based and get out of that silo work.
And we have to be more of that. I mean, here's an example of that working, and you're partnering with Catholic Social Services. So it's not go out and reinvent the wheel. They're better positioned to do what you want to do than you setting up a whole infrastructure when they already have it in place. Great organization to pick.
Exactly. And, you know, Mike Peel and his group, they are a lean, mean machine. They're a
no
small
kidding.
Staff who, you know, I am floored by the work that they do and the number of partners that they bring to the table.
Do you hear that, CJ and Alex? We're giving you a shout out. We know it's not just Mike.
They're an amazing team. I'm giving them a shout out too.
You've got the team.
I'm so thankful for the team that I have here and how much we are able to do. But I'm so thankful for the partners.
Yes.
There's no way that our small team could accomplish what we've been able to do over the last year on the program side alone.
People step up.
Working together with who we have been working with. And so collaboration is the new leadership. I believe that. It has to be.
If we're not going to collaborate
more,
I agree with you.
We're not going to get the needle move the way we need to.
It's the wave of the
future. That more than anything. I think from my experience, I've always been in the grassroots world in some way. And or the lean nonprofit world, and I've found that it's always coming down to how much we collaborate is how far we get.
I agree, and it requires a shift in mindset. People have to think about not what's in it for me, but what is for the greater good, and think about the bigger impact that you can have by the sum of the parts.
Is yeah,
so
exactly.
Much
well
bigger.
Said. Yes, it's not. Easy though, and I think
we
stick with it.
Right,
but, collaboration can sound good on paper. How it actually gets to be sustained is another question.
Right,
and
it's
it
not
takes
always
a
smooth
lot
sailing.
Of good communication.
It does.
It takes coming to the table and figuring out how there can be compromise at times because it's bringing together so many different elements of work from different organizations
and
it is,
different
personalities
and missions.
All of it.
It is not for the faint of heart.
No,
but we will do it.
When you make it happen the way we've all been able to, we know we have a bigger impact.
So in terms of barriers, you're out there. You're interacting with businesses big and small, with nonprofits, with government organizations. I mean, you're out there. I know that. I know your meeting schedule. It's like,
said my schedule on my phone looked like a Tetris game.
It's not pretty. What I say, Mike's the only person I know who's busier than I am. And that might sound like my ego, but you are really busy. So what are you experiencing? What have you observed to be your greatest barriers or the greatest barriers to actually financing community sustainability? Is it that it's a new concept? Is it that there's not enough money? What's the deal?
That's a great question. And I would say it's a variety of factors in my experience. It's definitely educational barriers to get started with. I think what I find are the businesses and nonprofits don't necessarily know all that's available because of the silo effect so often. There's so much information out there that is as a step alone to be able to connect the dots and provide that information in one place and make it easy and accessible, which is something we're known for with our whole localism movement,
right?
Which has made us so successful is making things more readily available. I think that's a big barrier that we've been able to start to address in an effective, bigger way with our partners again. I definitely think it's financing too, but I think a lot of that just comes down to, again, education. Because for me, it wasn't that we couldn't get financing available. It was that we just needed to know who to work with. And it was connecting with Danny to work with them and figure out a way with their generosity to launch a revolving loan fund for our Scale Up program to be able to
We do have to talk about that
together.
Too. But yes,
yeah,
it is. That is financing.
The education and the financing
communities
together is what is the core of the Scale Up program. And it isn't one or the other to me. I think they are interconnected. And I think there's a lot out there. Like Danny was saying about lending being such an opportunity that we need to look more to. I think it's out there to be solved, but it does require a lot of understanding of what the assets are in our community before we can even go further.
And when you hear people like Kimber talk and other presentations and stories from Danny and both of you and me being out there, you know what just a little bit of money can do to make a difference. Like if I remember the story about the woman who made the wedding cakes and how just a little bit of money and a little bit of training turned her mom and pop baking the cakes. She wasn't even getting deposits for the cakes. I remember that story so well because she just wanted to bake beautiful cakes and she could sell them. She didn't know how to operate a business. She's the epitome of the artist that knows how to create but doesn't know how to build the infrastructure.
Sure.
And financing those dreams is how some of the biggest companies in the country got started. Somebody said yes the first time.
Well, similarly, the Scale Up program is focused on even a little bit of financing and resources going as far as it can for these businesses that are in need of it and didn't even necessarily know they needed it until they got involved in the program to learn about how to save energy and to save as much money as they can on their energy bills and their energy costs. And so ultimately to get them to be able to reinvest those savings into their business and be able to grow and expand and be a stronger local business.
So I think it's really the perfect time, thanks for setting it up so well, to talk about what Scale Up is. Just give us a brief overview, what happened, the vision. It happened. It was wildly successful. People want more of it. Tell us about Scale Up.
So Scale Up is a program that we started with the 2030 district, the Tucson 2030 district, and Mrs. Green's World, and Physicians for Social Responsibility, and many others. Obviously, Community Investment Corporation here.
Lots of great
and many partners coming to the table to understand what the resources are that are already in our community and how to link them up better. I like to call it a platform to be a program that connects those dots more, makes those connections that we are so skilled at doing at Local First Arizona, but now doing that in the sustainability realm to ultimately meet ambitious goals for these businesses, to help them save money, to educate them on and really about the resources and tools available. A lot of these businesses have a good understanding going in about something along the lines of sustainability, but it's more giving them the tools and resources to benchmark their facilities, know where they're at, and then be able to meet larger goals for their businesses, their facilities, and meet the Tucson 2030 district goals. That's an overarching component of this program, major one, is to have these businesses set goals that are in line with those ambitious goals of at least 50% reductions for buildings involved in the 2030 district for their carbon emissions footprint by the year 2030. So,
and for me,
of it's connected.
When you talk about it, like the new light on it for me, the new emphasis is since the IPCC released its report on October 8th and the White House released its report the Friday after Thanksgiving, all of this to me put a spotlight on the work we're doing because the IPCC report, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change out of the United Nations, the most comprehensive report ever issued on climate change, said we have 12 years. To turn this, I'm calling it the Earth ship now. That's my original spin on it. To turn it around before we are at catastrophic impact. We're already seeing catastrophic impact. Let's be honest. If I lived in Northern California and my entire neighborhood was wiped out in 3 days, that's catastrophic.
Sure.
They still haven't found all the bodies. So it's hitting us already. But when you talk about things like Scale Up, what I loved about it, so everybody that's listening, is it was 6 weeks of training with content area experts that came in from you name it, of how to create more sustainable business practices, how to save money on your energy, not just tips. Here's your electric bill. Mm-hmm. Here's if you do this, here's what your electric bill will look like. Here's your water bill. So it was a very hands-on, thorough, integrated approach. I was proud to be a part of it, a small part of it, to talk about the importance of green teams.
Well, a big part of it. And it was a network that we were building.
It was
and I think
so
that you
important.
Are describing it very well in terms of the educational component that we were able to deliver on a week-to-week basis that had these business owners coming back for more and excited to be there for 3 hours a week after a
at
long
night.
Day. At
and
night.
I kept teasing you about not great big dinners offered either. I mean, that's a joke between us.
Yeah.
But it was like, no, that says volumes. 5:30 at night, worked all day. And I knew a lot of the people. They are small business owners or like Lynn Davis from Sonoran Glass. She works so hard. And then gear it up, bring your computer, sit down, work on minutia. We had a conference calls with the Department of Energy. I mean, it was amazing to me. And I didn't have to go to all of them. And I only missed one because I had to. To me, I got educated. I loved seeing the business partners getting involved. And then here's the piece, the big, buildup. Talk about the partnership with Community Investment Corporation.
Great segue.
Because after they did this 6 weeks, there were outcomes. There were things that were identified as being needed, like that you needed a new water heater or you needed to replace a bunch of pipes. So Danny,
So he really stepped up to the plate because this is a two-part program to me. It's the educational side that I already described with all the resources that you detailed there. And then it was the connecting of the dots about the financing. Knowing, for me, the vision of Scale Up has always been, how do we incentivize greater participation in 2030 district goals or ambitious carbon emissions reduction goals ultimately? And how do we make it accelerated so we can move the needle the way we need to, the way you just described the urgency to move the needle. And so Danny and I met, and we were letting him know that about this opportunity at the time to apply for funding from the state of Arizona. And we were fortunately able to achieve funding from the state to launch this program as a pilot after years of piloting different components of it. But that to finally be able to pull it all together into one program, one holistic, comprehensive program, was the opportunity in front of us. And Danny agreed to very generously provide $50,000 in funding for the loans to be there for the revolving loan fund. And so I am so thankful to him for believing in the vision, because we only had so much of a budget to work off of. We had a much larger budget that we're still working to meet to fully roll this out in the community. But for the pilot, it was enough to get it rolling with a cohort, get everybody together, get our accomplishments for each of those businesses on paper now that we have them involved and they're a network now. But I want to hand it off to Danny to describe what that looks like and how impactful it has been already for some of these businesses.
Well, we were excited to be a part of it. Small businesses, that's our wheelhouse. And so here's this group that was learning about conservation. Again, money-saving, very practical things that they could do. And the idea was, I think we've all done it, gone to conferences, trainings, and you have great ideas and they never get implemented.
Yeah, and then you come home.
That's right.
And the notebook goes on the shelf.
Exactly. And really the piece was trying to figure out, how do we make sure that the lessons learned are actually implemented? And it, you know, for us, it was a no-brainer. First of all, Local First is just the type of organization that we want to partner with. We are about local economies, local businesses, and that's what they're about. And bringing their strengths to what we do, just being able to offer those resources, this easiest decision that we've ever made. And I think one of the things that's great, and we've talked about partnership, is this is an iterative partnership. We've already sat down and talked about, what does the next scale up look like? How can we improve? How can we, you know, enhance our offerings, make sure it's exactly what the business owners are looking for, make sure that we have the money that we need, again, to get these projects implemented. And it's great to work with a group like Local First. I mean, we are, every time we come to the table, it's about, how do we make this better? So I mean, we couldn't have a better partner, and we feel lucky. Honestly, Mike and his group did the heavy lifting. We're just doing something that we already do. That's pretty easy for us. So
I could not agree with you more. Local First, you did the heavy lifting, and a lot of people, Physicians for Social Responsibility, they did a lot, but it was truly, it was like the quintessence of a successful partnership, as evidenced by the participation, everybody showing up every week, the celebration, and now the implementation, and other businesses wanting to, when can I sign up?
Exactly.
When can I sign up?
Exactly. But I also want to shout out an amazing young leader in this community who brought this to life with me very quickly, and that's CJ Agbenawag.
You cannot
our
Scale Up
program
manager.
Praise him
on my show. He teases me all the time.
he's amazing. And he's
I adore
truly,
him.
He's truly
he
someone that is moving the needle at
he
a very
passionately.
Early stage of his career already, taking this and running with it, and we ran with it. We had to move very
you
quickly with
run.
The pilot to meet the
run.
Funding requirements, and we did. We got
you
there.
Did.
In a short amount of time, in a few months, we got this up and running. Everything you described, Gina, as you know, it
was
went fast.
It was a race to the finish line.
Early planning, fast to implementation right away, to starting to assess it. And that's what we've done all in really 6 months' time. So to have had his leadership involved is what really made it go. It was something on paper for me for a long time, and it was connecting it to an organization like Local First Arizona and with young leaders like CJ and Alex Catadella, our Tucson membership coordinator,
who used to be our intern,
would scale up. And now she's in this great position with us. And it was all of that together that allowed for this program to take shape, to actually come to life and
succeed,
not just be something that
thrive.
Sits on the shelf as an idea. And it takes time. Timing is important, and it takes the right partners. And it wasn't right before. There were other partners pursued for this program, but it was the combination of everybody we've discussed and many more that we haven't even gotten to.
I know that we'd be saying, why didn't you mention us? Because we don't have time, and it's okay.
It's a long list, but we have a whole report, and we can certainly link to that.
Right.
If that's a possibility. But
there's other people that I want to name. We can absolutely link to that. And I love to bring that up because all of this, we'll have your website and links to all of that. Anything that we mentioned, Kelly's great at doing that. So to kind of wrap it up, even though I think we could do a Wednesday marathon here I've been smiling since we came on the air. Danny, anything you want to share about the crystal ball for 2019?
I think what we are looking at is we're excited about another round of scale-up.
Me too.
We are looking at expanding what we're doing with the alternative to predatory lending. And then another big thing is we are really investing in the micro-lending space, and that's basically $10,000 and less, $5,000 and less. We're working with the YWCA to invest in an app that will make it easier for people to access, as well as micro lenders. It's not something we're doing for just ourselves. We're doing it for the entire community. And I will say this idea of the collaboration being the new leadership is, Mike, I'm going to have to steal that.
I'm going to hashtag the heck out of it.
Yeah, and it's within our organizations. Our staff, Caroline Nelson, Carrie Kane, Nick Henry work on our, Brian Kehadu work in our lending department. We can't do these things without the passion of these types of individuals with these types of organizations. And so we're really looking forward to 2019, more good things to come. So thank you so much.
I am thrilled. And Mike, I don't know if we have time for your crystal ball. You've got a long list of things for 2019.
I'm going to say a ditto to everything that Danny just said.
I think we
are excited to unveil a larger program this year for Scale Up, among many other exciting initiatives for Local First Arizona. And programs, but for us, particularly with what we're talking about today, there will be more, and we're working to get a plan together for many businesses and nonprofits to participate, and I think it's going to be something that we can move on very fast this year.
And I'm just going to go out on a limb and say you two will be back sitting in the studio with me, hopefully like by mid-year, and talking about what we have been able to accomplish. From my perspective, very personal perspective, having been in this community 43 years and having been doing this work, this will be our 12th year, it feels to me like our time is now, like a lot of the right partners have come together, that we are really truly collaborators, and that we know it's give and take, that we have a vision for a truly sustainable and socially just Tucson. So I'm as excited as I have ever been for just making more and better and continuing. And I'm glad we brought up the YWCA. They're another powerful partner, just the champions for change and changing lives forever. They're ending cycles, which is what my work was for most of my life. It's ending the cycle of poverty, and then you end it forever. And it's through things like microlending
and partnership on one of our other programs with the YWCA. So I'm glad you brought them up. I think the time is now. I think you're hitting an extremely important point. Yeah, we're all, I think, awakening to the possibilities of a different way of going about our work. And I think
it goes back to
a better way of working together more effectively.
Instead of competition, collaboration.
Exactly.
I love that. So I love it that I get the last word, always, of course. And these guys are laughing.
You
can't see them, but they're laughing.
Yes.
And you will find all of their information and how to link to their organizations when the show podcast is released in a week or two. And then here is my last word. All of you that listen know we're committed to raising awareness about every aspect of climate change imaginable. Needless to say, it's very affirming to me to spend time with two people who are leaders in their community, leaders of their organizations, and who are truly committed to working consistently for a sustainable and socially just community and planet. We need them, and we need each and every one of you to be with us on this journey and joining us fighting the good fight, because there is no planet B, and because we know why. We only have 12 years to turn this ship around, and we all have to be a part of doing that. Stay connected with us, because we know that we can help all of us get there through our many educational platforms and sharing great messages like we did in this past hour. So thank you for being a part of our world. We have two great shows coming up in the next 2 weeks. On January 22nd, Dr. Benjamin Wilder from Tumamoc Hill, the Living Laboratory, he's doing something that's putting a spotlight on Tucson. It's a national spotlight. And on January 24th, Mindy Griffith, Executive Director of Bag It, Coping with Cancer, It's in the Bag, a show that will touch your heart and helps people diagnosed with cancer. So Danny and Mike, time really did fly. I cannot believe how fast it went. But hopefully time flies when you're having fun. So thank you for taking the time out of your mission and vision to come here and share your stories.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you so much. We appreciate it.